I think it's inevitable that an impeachment inquiry is going to get open.
It certainly looks like they are the kind of offenses that would call for impeachment hearings.
In your view, does that rise to the level of an impeachable offense?
Well, they would be impeachable offenses. There's nothing in the Constitution that prohibits the president from being indicted.
If House members find impeachable offenses, it is not just the right thing to do, it's their duty to do.
Do you believe all of this adds up to meet the standard for an impeachable offense?
There's a very real prospect that he may be the first president in quite some time to face the real prospect of jail time.
Well, that is at least what the Democrats are hoping, and that's what you saw on the Talking Head news shows yesterday morning. Good morning and welcome into the Monday edition of The Daily Perspective. Mark Congleton here. I'm glad you're along today. Thank you so much for being part of this show. It really does mean a lot to me that you're there each and every day. And for those of you who are listening, however you're listening, spread the word. Let other people know what you found here and why it tickles your particular funny bone. Hopefully you had a good weekend. If you lived anywhere near me, you spent part of it without power. That was our situation over the weekend. We had it was not a storm. We had some heavy rains come through late Saturday evening. And then somewhere between 10:30 and midnight, as those rains passed through our region, some strong winds followed those rains. And the strong winds following heavy rains knocked down trees. And that's one of the things, when you live in the wonderful Southland, you've got a lot of pine trees. And pine trees have shallow root systems, and when wind comes through and the ground has been soaking for a couple of days, the ground is soft and trees blow over. And when trees blow over, a lot of times they blow into power lines and you put the pieces together and come up with the final picture of people sitting around twiddling their thumbs in the dark because there's nothing to do. Well, there are things to do. But that was our Sunday. We spent our day burning through our supply of firewood because we have a fireplace, but honestly, it's not a fireplace for heating the house. It's just for enjoying. Ah, I love a good fire. Listen to that wood crackle. Oh, I'm just doing my part, you know, doing my part for global warming. But that's what we did yesterday was we burned through, I think, all but three logs of our supply of firewood. So I'll be going to get more firewood sometime this week. At any rate, we managed to stay warm between the fireplace and blankets. Fortunately, we have backup batteries for our mobile devices, and we could still get cell signals because the power wasn't off everywhere. It was just in spots. And that, of course, sent the power crews running all over the place looking for exactly where these outages were occurring. And finally, around, I guess it was 5:30, it was after dark, 5:30 or so, everything flicker, and then ding, we noticed we have a little digital clock and some other things in our entertainment center, and all that stuff started powering back up again. Of course, since the power went off in the middle of the night, none of the lights were on. And so we sat there in the dark for a few seconds, just marveling in the fact that we could see what time it was across the room. And then my wife, Jane, reaches up and turns the lamp on over her chair and starts chuckling. She says, "I love lights." Oh, my goodness. Well, some people suffered some damage. We got out and rode around a bit and saw a few places where people had fences torn up. And there's a car dealership on one of the highways nearby that the office is an old house. And a tree fell right through the middle of it, just crushed it right through the middle of the house. And we've seen pictures online of a lot of other people having damage and the like, but it looks like things are close to being back to normal again. So there we have it. That when that's the highlight of your weekend, nothing else happens. When the power going off, the lights going off is the height of your weekend. That's the most excitement you've had. Odds are you're living a really dull life. Welcome to my world. Oh, my. Hopefully your weekend went well as well, and you're looking forward to this Monday that puts us about 15 days away from Christmas. And in some people's book, well, like my buddy, my partner, Dave Mack, that puts him 14 and a half days or 14 and nine tenths of a days away from Christmas shopping, because that's, you know, he'll do that on his way back to the house Christmas Eve. Not me. I think I've got to check my list twice again and make sure that it's done. But I think all of mine is done. I've just got to start wrapping. And I did a little fishing expedition with my wife yesterday, because we were in a store just walking around killing time, because there was it's nothing at home. So we're walking around the store and I said, oh, look, they're having a sale on wrapping paper. And she says, I think we got that covered. We're good. So I know I have materials. I have supplies. So hopefully later today, I can get into the wrapping paper and start putting some goodies under the tree for her to start shaking and wondering what they are. And that's part of the fun, isn't it? Well, I opened the show today with the talking heads from the news shows on Sunday. While Jane and I were out Sunday morning, when it was obvious that we weren't going to get power, we finally got dressed and headed out and found some place, a little town with power, and we found a place that was serving up breakfast. And we had some breakfast, and on the wall above our booth was a television, and on that television was CNN, America's least trusted news network. And on CNN was Representative Gerald Nadler, Democrat from New York. He's the incoming chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, and he was on for what I thought was an unusually long time. But he told CNN's State of the Union yesterday, it appears that President Donald Trump was at the center of a massive fraud, several massive frauds against the American people. Those are his words. He went on to say, and it's our job now, the job of the Justice Department, the special counsel, and the Congress to get to the bottom of this, to find out exactly what was going on, to find out the extent of the president's involvement, to find out basically what the president knew and when did he know it, so that we can then hold him accountable. This follows a court filing on Friday by prosecutors in the Southern District of New York in the case of Michael Cohen, President Trump's former personal attorney. Oh, by the way, if you've only been casually following this whole Russia, this whole made-up, completely fabricated search for things to do with the election, then you may not be aware that they essentially shopped part of it out to New York, because they could get some jurisdictional advantage in New York. They couldn't get in Washington, D.C., because they knew that they could file some cases. They could do some paperwork in New York that would make things look even worse for Trump. And that's the reason we have things coming out of New York. The court filing in New York mentions pre-election payments to two women who said they had extramarital affairs with Trump. According to that court filing, quote, with respect to both payments, Cohen acted with the intent to influence the 2016 presidential election in particular. And as Cohen himself has now admitted, with respect to both payments, he acted in coordination with the direction of individual one. Individual one, by the way, is Donald Trump, who has publicly denied knowing anything about hush money paid to Stormy Daniels and Karen McDougal. Tapper asked Nadler, whose committee would be the one to bring up impeachment proceedings against the president, are those impeachable offenses? His answer? Well, they'd be impeachable. They would be impeachable offenses. Whether they are important enough to justify an impeachment is a different question. That's actually a really big question. But certainly they would be impeachable offenses, because even though they were committed before the president became president, they were committed in the service of fraudulently obtaining the office. That's important. I want you to remember that phrase, fraudulently obtaining the office. Moving on, that would be an impeachable offense. But the fact of the matter is that we see from these indictments and charging statements, what we see is a much broader conspiracy against the American people involving these payments, involving an attempt to influence the campaign improperly with improper payments involving the Russians, though the Russians are back, trying to get influence in the campaign involving the president lying for an entire year about his ongoing business arrangements, business dealings with the Russians, involving obstruction of justice. All of these have to be looked at very seriously by the Congress, by the special counsel, and by the Justice Department, and to see what actions we should then take. And what is clear also is that the Republican Congress absolutely tried to shield the president. The new Congress will not try to shield the president. We will try to get to the bottom of this in order to serve the American people and to stop this massive conspiracy, this massive fraud on the American people. There's more to this. Go check the show notes today if you want to read the rest of the article. I think that's enough because there's another one I want to touch on. But before we go there, a little note. Back in 2008, Barack Obama's campaign paid the largest single fine to the FEC for campaign finance violations. The largest single fine in history. Did you hear about it? Yeah, only if you're a news junkie. Only if you're a news nerd. That's the only way you would have heard about it. And that would have had to take some digging. Nobody went to jail. There was no publicity. There was no pearl clutching and gasping. No shock and dismay. No cries of, we can't let this stand. We can't. There was none of that. You didn't see anything reported about a 2008 issue with the largest single fine ever paid to the FEC for campaign finance violations. The biggest single fine in the history of this nation. And you never heard about it. But Donald Trump in his private life, before his thinking about becoming president, May, and we don't even know. All we have is the assertions of people who hate him and hate the fact that he won and hate the fact that their candidate lost. That's all we have. As well as the testimony of people who are making deals to try to soften their prosecution for their criminal action. They're making deals. People caught in perjury traps. We've already explored that. We have the statements of these people, and then we have the statements of Democrat politicians who don't understand, who don't have a concept, who have no relationship with honesty. That's what we have. Now, Jerry Nadler, representative, Democrat from New York, he's the incoming chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. He told Jake Tapper that Trump's hush money payments to two women with his own money were impeachable offenses. Meanwhile, Congress has paid out $17 million over the past 10 years, according to public records. This is not something that had to be searched for, dug up, sued. Nobody had to file lawsuits to find this. This is all public record. Over the past 10 years, Congress has paid out $17 million for unwanted sexual advances by unnamed lawmakers. Unnamed lawmakers. $17 million of your money. Not their money. Not their private money. Not money from a select group of donors, but tax money. Your money. Remember, the government has no money. Everything they spend is your money. They spent $17 million over the past 10 years for unwanted sexual advances by unnamed lawmakers. They are buying witnesses off, have been for the past 10 years, probably much longer than that. That's just what we have here. They're paying people off, and they are remaining anonymous because they're paying people off. This is one of the reasons I refer to those people in the swamp as criminals. Now, if they'll release the names of everybody in Congress who's been implicated in the sexual harassment claim, which was kept silent and paid for by taxpayer-funded slush funds before or after they try to impeach President Trump for using his own money for something illegal, will they do that? I think that's the question we have to ask today. Representative Nadler, I suggest you go shut up and deal with the dirty linens in your closet and in Congress's closet. You go take care of your business, sir. It's very clear to us what you're up to. More when the Daily Perspective continues.
Merry Christmas, ladies.
Merry Christmas, Mr. Buble.
Are you ready to sing a little Jingle Bells?
Yes.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way.
Oh, wow. What fun it is to ride. We're 15 days away from the big day. Yeah. Jingle bells, jingle. So have you done your Christmas shopping yet? I saw that. The shock. 2 weeks! Well, here's an idea. Give somebody the gift of a subscription to the Daily Perspective newsletter. I know, it's shameless huckstering. It's just cheesy for me to push that as a Christmas gift. It's horrible. It's tacky. But you could. Yes, you could. Just go to the our Facebook pages, the Mark and Mac Show page, and the Daily Perspective page. Click the sign up button and fill out that information. And then when your friend says, "Hey, why did I get this email? And what am I supposed to be affirming here?" Say, "Merry Christmas! I got you a subscription to the Daily Perspective newsletter. You're gonna love it because it's got the daily show notes from the podcast and other things as well." And then avoid that person for a few days, or go buy them a coffee or something to apologize. But and the Daily Perspective newsletter, get signed up today and join the growing family of people who are getting that little dose of inside information from the show in their inbox. Well, let's move along to some other criminal activity in Washington, D.C. Maybe you're like I am here. And that is that even now in my life, I've never actually been to Washington, D.C. No, I haven't. I really haven't. It's one of those things, one of those goals, one of those hopes in life that's just never happened. And hopefully in the next few years, I can get up there and have a look around. When I can afford, you know, an armed escort. But I want to go. I want to see these buildings. I want to see the historic sites. I want to see these places where things happen. I want to see those things. But at the same time, there's a really large chunk of little old me that feels like he'd have to go get hosed off afterwards because it's just such a nasty place. There's so much crime. There's so much hypocrisy. There's so many lies. There's so much deception. There's so much bad coming out of that city. And I feel like that I would have to go to the resting places of the founding fathers immediately afterwards and get on my knees and beg them for forgiveness. Because what's happened in our country is just despicable. The fact that progressives, leftists, have taken the great dream of our founding fathers and prostituted it into something which just suits them. And they're looking for ways to take that great dream, that American dream, and use it as a way to rule over other people, because they firmly believe deep in their heart of hearts that those people, the unwashed masses, need someone to guide them because they're too dumb to do it themselves. Speaking of people who believe that you are a deplorable, Hillary Rodham Clinton. Well, she's back in the news. The former chief financial officer, the CFO of the Clinton Foundation, has become a whistleblower. And during his interview with investigators, Andrew Kessel told them he knows where all the bodies are buried. This is according to The Hill. The 48-page submission, dated August 11th, 2017, supports its claims with 95 exhibits, including internal legal reviews that the foundation conducted on itself in 2008 and 2011. Those reviews flagged serious concerns about legal compliance, improper commingling of personal and charity business, and quid pro quo promises made to donors while Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State. Quid pro quo. You donate, we'll do you favors. The submission also cites an interview with its investigators conducted with Andrew Kessel that quotes the foundation's longtime chief financial officer as saying he was unable to stop former President Clinton from commingling personal, business, and charitable activities inside the foundation, and that he knows where all the bodies are buried. Quote, there is probable cause that the Clinton Foundation has run afoul of IRS rules regarding tax-exempt charitable organizations and has acted inconsistently with its stated purpose. That's what MDA analyst Analytics alleged in its submission. It goes on to say, the foundation should be investigated for all of the above-mentioned improprieties. The tax rules, codes, statutes, and the rule of law should and must be applied in this case. Current and former Clinton Foundation sources confirm that CFO Kessel met with MDA investigators in late 2016 and subsequently was interviewed by FBI agents in 2017, but they insist he did not implicate former President Clinton or the foundation in any illegality. Kessel told those investigators that one of the biggest problems was Mr. Clinton's commingling and the use of business and donated funds and his personal expenses. According to the whistleblower submission, quote, there is no controlling Bill Clinton. He does whatever he wants and runs up incredible expenses with foundation funds. So states a separate interview memo attached to the submission. It goes on to say, Bill Clinton mixes and matches his personal business with that of the foundation. Many people within the foundation have tried to caution him about this, but he does not listen, and there is really no talking to him. The memo also claims that Kessel confirmed to the private investigators that private lawyers reviewed the foundation's practices once in 2008 and another time in 2011, and each time found widespread problems with governance, accounting, and conflicts of interest. The memo alleges Kessel said, I have addressed it before, and let me tell you, I know where all the bodies are buried in this place. That's the third time we've heard that phrase. Isn't that interesting? Foundation officials confirm Kessel attended the meeting but declined to describe what was discussed, except to say Kessel strongly denies that he said or suggested that the Clinton Foundation or President Clinton engaged in inappropriate or illegal activities. Mr. Kessel believed he was meeting an old professional acquaintance who was looking for business from the foundation. That's what the foundation said in a statement. MDA Analytics said it stands by the information it submitted to the IRS and can prove its accuracy. The comments attributed to Kessel track closely to statements employees and executives of the foundation made during the 2008 and 2011 internal reviews. For example, the 2008 review written by a private lawyer named Kumiki Gibson, who was hired by the foundation to study its governance, directly flagged concerns about improper commingling of charitable and private business. The work of the foundation and the president are intertwined, it says, in a way that creates confusion at and undermines the work of the foundation at virtually every level. That's what Gibson wrote, warning that such commingling poses reputational and legal challenges and with confusion, inefficiencies, and waste. So what we're getting now out of this, quote, charity, end quote, is what we have said for quite some time now, for years, and that is that the Clinton Family Foundation was essentially a slush fund to pay for the wealthy lifestyles of the Clintons, that it was used as a place that political acquaintances could make donations in exchange for political favors. Will anything really come of this? Will anything really, really happen to the Clintons? That depends. Are people fed up enough with them yet? Well, if you go by ticket sales for their big tour. Yeah, people are tired of the Clintons. Very. They've been putting tickets on Groupon, offering deals. In Canada, at that first appearance, tickets that were selling, they started at over $70 a seat and went up to hundreds of dollars per seat. The day of the event, they were selling for as little as $6 a seat. They were desperate to fill seats in that mostly empty venue. So yeah, people are tired of the Clintons. The people who loved them, the people who appreciated them, the people who thought they were the greatest thing to happen to the United States in history, those people are either, they're either dead or they've moved on. And when you talk about the Clintons and you think about people being dead or moving on, in many cases, they very well could be the same thing. Well, a federal judge has ordered additional fact-finding in the investigation into Hillary Clinton's use of a private email server to probe whether or not Clinton's private email system, which she used during her four-year tenure as Secretary of State, was a deliberate attempt to bypass the Freedom of Information Act. U.S. District Court Judge Royce Lamberth ruled in a scathing opinion that conservative watchdog group Legal Watch, or Judicial Watch, should be permitted to access documents it requested as part of a 2014 Freedom of Information Act request relating to the State Department's response to the 2012 Benghazi terror attack. So 2 years after the attack, a Freedom of Information Act request was made, and it has been ignored for 4 years. Just ignored. Ignore those people. Ignore them and they'll go away. Which, by the way, is a very progressive approach to dealing with issues. We'll come back to this after the break. But will anything come of this? We'll have to see. We are talking about a group of people who's paid out millions upon millions of dollars of your money to silence sexual advance accusations. Can we trust them to do the right thing? Just between you and me? No, I don't think so. So, whose house is up for sale? We'll talk about that in a few minutes here on The Daily Perspective. I'm actually dreaming of a not so much a white Christmas. Considering the way things have gone for us lately weather-wise, I just like it to be a warm Christmas. I may have to go someplace else for it, though. Oh, you're listening to The Daily Perspective. Mark Congleton here, driving this big rig through the weirdness that is our lives in this nation today. And trying to deliver a daily dose of life, liberty, and a bit of absurdity as well. It is, we're right at 2 weeks away from Christmas. Christmas shopping is in full swing for most people. For some people, that won't happen until Christmas Eve, but you know who you are. And hopefully things are coming together for you. And that Christmas is going well and all that. So I'm sorry, I got distracted. I'm thinking about, here's an item you might want to buy somebody for Christmas. This is just a thought. This is just, I'm just speculating. I'm just kind of spitballing, as they say. Yeah. No, not Elvis records. Not anything like that. No memorabilia or whatever. Well, maybe it is memorabilia. And it's really cheap when you think about it. I mean, all things considered, in the big picture, this item can be had for a lot less than it was on the market not too long ago. You see, there are going to be some Elvis Presley fans who are really about to be shook up. Because they're learning they can actually own a piece of the king, and the price is really not that high. The Palm Springs pad where Elvis and his new bride Priscilla hid out after their secret wedding back in 1967 is on the market Yeah, it's on the market. It was once billed as the House of Tomorrow. It's a modernist residence built back in 1960. It originally listed for $9.5 million. It's a house designed by William Crissell. It's got pod-like structures, futuristic pod-like structures, floating stairs. It has a suspended see-through fireplace, stone-accented walls, 5,000 square feet. It is a huge home. Floor-to-ceiling windows. The kitchen has a circular freestanding island with an indoor grill. There's a set of stairs that narrows as you go up to a drape-heavy bedroom. It's one of five. Windows, closets lining the walls. The Love Nest also comes with a swimming pool in the back and some memorabilia of Elvis himself. All the art and furnishings, including the portraits of the cultural icon, the Kang himself, are included. Now, a year ago, it was listed for $5.9 million. $5.9. What's the bargain basement price you can get it for today? Well, if you act now, we'll throw in this set of Ginzu steak knives. And your very own autographed squatty potty for $2.695 million. That's right. That's right, campers. You can own Elvis's Palm Springs Honeymoon Hideout for a mere $2.695 million. I think you should jump on it myself. Go ahead. Get one for me while you're at it. Wow. Oh, my. Okay, getting back to more. Back to what we were talking about in this case of the email server. District Court Judge Royce Lambert, he's issued a scathing opinion that Judicial Watch, a conservative watchdog group, should be permitted access to the documents it's been requesting and asking for 4 years relating to the State Department's response to the 2012 Benghazi terrorist attack. The judge characterized Clinton's use of a private email server as, quote, one of the gravest modern offenses to government transparency, end quote. Additionally, Judge Lambert said Judicial Watch should be given testimony about the State Department's failure to be transparent regarding what officials knew concerning Clinton's private emails at the time the Freedom of Information Act request was initially processed. He wrote in this 11-page opinion, State played this card close to its chest. At best, state's attempts to pass off its deficient search as legally adequate during settlement negotiations was negligence born out of incompetence. At worst, career employees in the state and justice departments colluded to scuttle public scrutiny of Clinton, skirt Freedom of Information Act, and hoodwink this court. The article in Politico says the judge suggested that some State Department and Justice Department employees friendly to Clinton might have been trying to keep the emails from the public. He noted that messages eventually released by the State Department showed Clinton telling her daughter Chelsea that the assault in Benghazi, Libya was a terrorist attack, even though the Obama administration long maintained that it was not. Remember all those talking head shows where they kept insisting it was in response, an angry response to a YouTube video that nobody had ever seen. Justice Department lawyers have argued that they had no legal duty to search records not in the State Department's possession at the time a Freedom of Information Act request was made, and that lawyers actually working on the suit before Lambert didn't have as much information about what Clinton turned over as did more senior officials. Well, Lambert succinctly responded to the State Department's narrow view of its legal duties, saying, legally it's wrong. Judicial Watch President Tom Fitton is pretty happy about the ruling. He said, the historic court ruling raises concerns about the Hillary Clinton email scandal and government corruption that millions of Americans share. Judicial Watch looks forward to conducting careful discovery into the Clinton email issue, and we hope the Justice Department and State Department recognize Judge Lambert's criticism and help, rather than obstruct, this court-ordered discovery. I have to go back to what I said earlier. We're dealing with people here. We're dealing with people who paid, who have paid $17 million of your money over the past 10 years, according to public records, to settle and quiet claims of unwanted sexual advances by unnamed lawmakers. We're dealing with professional politicians, deep state actors, people who have been working inside the government for so long that they have a deeply entrenched sense of entitlement. They firmly believe that they are somehow owed the position they have and the money they make, and even more. And as a sidebar, speaking of the money they make, go look up how much someone who works for the federal government makes who does exactly what you do. Just go look it up. You may have been in your profession for your entire adult life, and odds are someone working for the federal government doing what you do, who hasn't been there for nearly as long as you've been doing what you do, makes substantially more than you do. And every penny of that salary is coming out of your paycheck and mine. And yet these people think they're entrenched, they're safe, they are owed what they have. And they believe that they are important and necessary. And this goes back to what I keep saying, and I know it sounds like I'm a broken record, but the bottom line is that progressives fervently, deeply, passionately, religiously believe that they are both morally and intellectually superior to you, to me, to anyone who is not a progressive. So they believe that they should be paid more than someone in the general public for doing exactly the same thing, simply because they are part of government and they are part of the team that is doing everything they can to make sure that you and your life and your loved ones are protected from yourselves because you don't know any better. And these are the people, if we go back to the beginning of the program, these are the people who are pointing fingers and condemning and hoping to impeach our president. These are the people who want to see Donald Trump drug through the mud. These are the people who are trying. They're trying very, very hard to sully his name. I heard a great description of it, and I can't believe I didn't think about this particular phrasing before. But earlier this morning, I heard someone refer to it as making him so radioactive, nobody wants to touch him. And that's absolutely true. That's exactly what they're doing today. With all of this talk from the talking heads about impeachment on the talking head shows yesterday, they're distracting you from what's happening with Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton and their illegal activities. They're distracting you from the unconstitutional activities of Democrats and what they want to do when they take power next month. They're distracting you by trying to make Donald Trump so radioactive that nobody will touch him when it comes time for re-election. That's what they're trying to do. They've realized that they can't boot the man from office. He hasn't done anything. There have been no high crimes or misdemeanors. It's just not there. They have nothing to work with. So what they're doing is making him so dirty nobody wants to associate with him. So they can put who they want in office. That's what's going on. Remember that. More when the show continues after the break. This is The Daily Perspective. You're listening to The Daily Perspective. Merry Christmas, y'all.
Run, run, Rudolph. Santa's got to make it to town.
Yeah, we're 2 weeks away from Christmas Eve. It's kind of becoming real, isn't it? If you've been going through the hustle and bustle, the daily rush of life, you've seen the decorations. Yeah, yeah, all the radio stations are playing Christmas music. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And all of a sudden, 2 weeks! Yeah. You know what? It kind of hit me yesterday. I told you earlier about my wife and I sitting in we're actually in a huddle house yesterday morning, which, by the way, the wait staffs at the huddle houses have the best t-shirts on the planet. I just got to say, my favorite is, skinny cooks are not to be trusted, but so we're sitting there, we're talking about this, that, and the other thing. And, we're waiting on our breakfast order to come. And they've got on the background music, they've got Christmas music playing. And honestly, it's tune after tune of Christmas music. And wow, it's Christmas. Now, this is me being an idiot because I've already, and I told you this, Thanksgiving Day, I'm the guy setting up the Christmas tree. Because my wife, Jane, says, hey, could you set that up because you're going to be out of town this weekend and I'd like to get a start on decorating it. So me being the good hubby said, yes, ma'am. And so I set it up and started to, and you know, I got it all set. And ours is one of those pre-lit, it's in a box, it's a pipe cleaner. You know what I'm talking about. It's one of those trees. It's got the LED bulbs on it. So I went ahead and paid the money for that thing a few years ago because the LED bulbs last forever. And you don't have to sit around going, God, which one of these bulbs is out? You don't have to string lights on the tree, and you don't have to go through and find which one's burned out. They're great. If you can get the LED pre-lit tree, it's just fantastic. But I mean, okay. I know the real Christmas tree is the bomb. It's the way to go. It smells good. The house smells like Christmas. It's just amazing. I love it. And you just have to be sick to enjoy vacuuming up all those needles afterwards. But then, you know, that's your thing. You do you. But I got it set up. Because my sweet Jane, she's going to get her Christmas on. She's going to decorate the thing while I'm in New Orleans. So I leave the morning after Thanksgiving, drive to New Orleans, do my visiting there, you know, spend some time with my son and some friends, and then come back the next evening. And not a thing, not a single ornament, nothing. I had to hurry and get it done, though. Not bitter at all. Hey, at a press conference last Thursday, the presumptive incoming Speaker of the House, the one, the only, Crazy Aunt Nancy, Nancy Pelosi, Democrat, California, who's bought the big gavel. She's just excited. She's criticized the notion of a border wall. She called it immoral. When a reporter asked Pelosi about the possibility that a continuing resolution, a CR, passed by the House of Representatives might fund a border fence, the Congresswoman argued that such funds are for border security. Pelosi then stated that she believes a wall is a step too far. She said, well, most of us, speaking for myself, wait a minute, most of us, speaking for myself, are you most of us, Nancy? Most of us, speaking for myself, consider the wall immoral, ineffective, expensive. And the president said he promised it. He also promised Mexico would pay for it. So even if they did, it's immoral still. We have a responsibility, all of us, to secure our borders, north, south, and coming in by plane. And that's a responsibility we honor, but we do so by honoring our values as well. Okay. The battle over President Trump's long-promised southern border wall once again reached the fever pitch Thursday as the House and Senate passed a stopgap spending bill in order to continue funding the government. The bill gives Democrats and Republicans until December 21st to come up with a budget plan. Democratic leaders were supposed to meet with President Trump this week, but the meeting had to be rescheduled following the passing of former President George H.W. Bush. It will now take place Tuesday morning, tomorrow. According to USA Today, the president said he would be willing to allow a government shutdown if Congress doesn't approve $5 billion for construction of his southern border wall. The $5 billion figure has been a sticking point between Trump and Democratic lawmakers. On Thursday, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, Democrat from New York, echoed Pelosi's sentiment regarding a border wall, saying the following on the floor of the Senate. As everyone knows, Democrats have offered to pass the bipartisan DHS appropriations bill agreed to 6 months ago, which includes $1.6 billion for border security. See, there's the term again, border security. They want to be able to claim they're in favor of a secure border, but they won't pay for what will make the border secure. Moving on. Now there's been some confusion about that figure. Let me be clear. The $1.6 billion cannot be used to construct any part of President Trump's 30-foot-tall concrete border wall. It can only be used for fencing, using technology currently deployed at the border, and only where the experts say fencing is appropriate and makes sense as a security feature. This is something Democrats have always been for. Smart, effective, appropriate border security. Okay, I have to break into Uncle Chucky here and go back and spell this out. It can only be used for fencing, using technology currently deployed at the border. This technology that people are climbing over, digging under, and breaking through, that's what they want. That's what he says. You can buy more of this that doesn't work. That's what he's saying. Only where the experts say, experts. Who are these experts? People who agree with the Democrat politicians. Whether what they are agreeing with is real or not, whether it's unicorns, pixies, and rainbows, or it's something concrete, it doesn't matter as long as they agree with the Democrats. That's what's important. That's who the experts are. And these experts say fencing is appropriate and makes sense as a security feature. Of course they say it's appropriate and makes sense as a security feature because it doesn't make sense and it's not secure and it lets people get through. That's why. Smart, effective, appropriate. Of course it's appropriate border security for the Democrats. It lets potential Democrat voters invade our country. He goes on to say, this is so good that every Republican appropriator signed off on that bill a few months ago. Of course, he's misrepresenting this. You need to go look and see what he's talking about because he's misrepresenting what happened. Misrepresenting. Definition. Lying. Including Leader McConnell, Senator Shelby, Senator Rubio, and Senator Graham. They were all for it. This is a bipartisan compromise proposal. Now, if they cannot go for that, the proposal they signed off on and negotiated because President Trump is pounding on the table in an irrational way, there's a second opinion. Now, you have to remember that Chuck Schumer, the senator, the Democrat from New York, the chief thing he is responsible for doing is lying to the American public about the Republicans. That's his job. Anytime he speaks, remember, that's his job. Schumer then suggested that lawmakers pass multiple bipartisan appropriations bills and a continuing resolution for the Department of Homeland Security. He also criticized the Trump administration for allegedly not having a plan in place for the construction of the proposed wall, as well as having the taxpayers foot the bill. He added that the wall is simply political fodder for the president. Yeah, that's exactly what Chuck Schumer and the Democrats want you to believe, that it's political fodder. They also want you to believe that he wants to have you and I, the taxpayers, foot the bill. He said that was not going to be the case. But then again, he has met opposition at every turn. Every turn. And he's looking for options, trying to find ways. And the accusation that he didn't have a plan? Yeah, he's had, I'm pretty sure he's not had just one plan. He's had plans and another plans and contingency plans, and every time he turns around, political animals, swamp dwellers, have been working to undermine his plans. So that's something that you have to keep in mind as well. He's got the swamp working against him at every turn. As far as you and I paying the bill, footing the bill, the amount of money he's talking about, we spend many, 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 many more times that corralling these people, detaining them, and shipping them back over the border again every year. We'd actually save money by building the wall. Well, I'm going to build a wall between me and the rest of the family as I wrap gifts later on today. Hopefully you will as well. God bless you. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow on The Daily Perspective.